Planet FM is a platform that champions diversity. Not all our programs reflect the views of the station. We encourage you to consider a wide range of information from trusted sources when making decisions about your health.
To fulfil and comply to government and broadcasting edicts, anything uttered by me, please note this, is an opinion. Thank you.
A year ago, and I find myself living a life where I have become the coalface of the questioning of safe and effective with COVID vaccines. And as I said, I'm working, 70 or 80 hour weeks with a huge team of volunteers, 20,000 people in our community. And so how do I feel besides exhausted? In all honesty, I swing between feeling enraged, frustrated, sad. I cry often because I process the stories that come through. I speak to many families on the telephone and listen to their stories and record their stories of family members, with permanently injured with blood clots and strokes, or family members who have died in the 48 hours after their vaccine who just simply didn't wake up. And these people range in age, right from 33 years of age right up to 100 years of age. So it's really very difficult for me to keep my equilibrium when I pick up a newspaper or, God forbid, turn on the news on the television and I see the propaganda. I can call it nothing more than propaganda that is rolled out day after day on every platform, 24 hours a day, telling New Zealanders nothing more than safe and effective. And then I sit quietly in my little home by the beach and I live in the twilight zone. Because I speak to dozens, I take hundreds of reports from families where their lives are permanently changed. There has been no acknowledgement. They are silent. They are not given any media time. They're not interviewed on the TV. They don't even get a column inch in the Herald. So it's hard for me to keep my equilibrium and to retain my faith in this government and adverse reaction monitoring system. It takes a lot of effort for me. With the people who are saying no, I want to watch and wait. I don't trust this. There are too many adverse reactions.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone, I have Linda Wharton, and Linda was previously interviewed by me 2 months ago, and she's back. And I just wish to say kia ora, greetings, Linda.
Kia ora, Tim. Thank you so much for inviting me back. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Linda. Linda, a number of people will not know of your background. Are you able to give a few moments to let people know of the depth of your history?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to, Tim. I'm a Kiwi living here in Auckland, New Zealand. My background is I've really had a dual career for the past 35 years. So I've been in clinical practice as a traditional Chinese acupuncturist and naturopath for 35 years. But alongside that, I've also had a second career as a health researcher and writer. And I've been a freelance health journalist for many years, a columnist for newspapers and magazines both here in New Zealand and Australia. And I'm the author of 3 holistic women's health books as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, you also started a Facebook group. Can you tell our audience a little more, please?
Yeah, sure. So Facebook group that has grown into a monster. It's grown into a massive community of almost 20,000 people, predominantly from New Zealand, but we have members from all around the world. It's a Facebook group called the Health Forum NZ. And I started this group coming up to 6 months ago because with my background as a health researcher and a writer, through last year I was following the development of the COVID-19 vaccine very closely and with great interest. And then it was time for New Zealand to start talking about the rollout of the vaccines here in New Zealand. and I became increasingly concerned about the simplistic messaging that I was hearing on all media platforms and from the government, a messaging that basically just had one stance at all times, which was safe and effective. And having followed the development and the rollout in the countries that have rolled out sort of 6 months before us, in particular UK, USA and Israel, I was very aware that there was another side to the story besides safe and effective. And so I kept waiting for the New Zealand press, just asking intelligent questions and sharing the other side of the story. And when it became obvious to me that this just wasn't going to happen, I decided that I would create a Facebook platform, thinking it would just be a sleepy little place where I had the opportunity to share some of this research, to share some of these events and observations from overseas. And as I say, started with one member, and now nearly 6 months later, we've got almost 20,000 members. So it's really taken on a massive life force of its own.
So your face group has evolved into something, naturally, that you never expected, and part of it has become the Citizens Database of Injuries and Deaths. Can you tell us about this place?
Sure, and I most certainly did not anticipate that I would be at the coalface of such a thing here in New Zealand. So as my community grew, the Facebook community, as it grew, because I was publishing science-based evidence from around the world about what we don't know about the mRNA vaccines and about the adverse reactions and deaths that were occurring in the countries that were 6 months ahead of us in the rollout, I started sharing that kind of information in the group. And of course, that started attracting New Zealanders to the group who themselves have had an adverse reaction, or people that had a family member or a close friend who had either died in the days or weeks post-vaccine or had had a serious adverse reaction. So those kinds of people have been attracted to the community. And what became evident very, very quickly is that as they shared about their personal experiences, adverse reactions, it became very obvious that many, many, many of these reactions had not been reported to the government reporting system. And here in New Zealand, we call that CALM, or Centre for Adverse Reaction Monitoring. And so with the low rate of reporting, I decided that, along with a group of volunteers, a group that's now grown to probably somewhere between 20 and 30 people involved volunteering, that we would start actually recording the many injuries and deaths that people were talking about in our group. So we record those onto what we call a citizens database of adverse reactions and deaths. But also, every time we come across somebody that hasn't reported, we give them the means of reporting. So we give them the link to the online reporting system. And we also now actually have a team of one doctor and five registered nurses who are volunteering with the Health Forum to support these families who report to the government reporting system.
Can you tell the listeners what sort of adverse reactions you are hearing about, please?
Okay. That's a great question. So maybe if we backtrack slightly from that question to just look at, in the, quote, informed consent process that New Zealanders go through before they receive their jab, they receive a paper that talks about the likely or the possible adverse reactions, and that alludes to soreness at the injection site, to possibility of temporary fever and a headache are the main things that are spoken about. And I believe that now there may also be a mention of the possibility of myocarditis or heart inflammation. But over and above that, nothing else is mentioned. So if you put that to one side and then you look at what are we actually seeing in the citizens database and what are we actually seeing in the government reporting system, the CALM system, the list of adverse reactions, yes, it does include sore arms and headaches, but it ranges from there up to much, much more serious instances of things like blood clots, heart attacks, strokes, hemorrhages and bleeding problems, thrombocytopenia, which is where it's an immune response where the platelets, the clotting factor in the body, disappears, which is why we've got these records of hemorrhagic kind of problems. Paralysis, what we call Guillain-Barré syndrome, which can occur with any vaccine, but does seem to be occurring at a more frequent rate with the mRNA vaccine. And that is the paralysis that can be long-lasting, can take a year or more to recover from, and in some cases permanent. Then we've seen things like Bell's palsy, myocarditis and pericarditis, which are heart inflammation syndromes. Another thing we're seeing a lot of, and this is very acknowledged, is a suppression of the immune system in such a way that latent viruses in the body are reactivated. So we're seeing a lot of cases of post-vaccine herpes zoster, which is shingles, and also herpes. Quite a list, isn't it? Tinnitus. Lots of cases of tinnitus and also appendicitis, pancreatitis, which is inflammation of the pancreas, and kidney disease as well. So that's just a sample of some of the things that we're recording both in the citizens database and in the government CALM reporting system.
I see. So these are across the country what's happening now, which what I gather is exactly what's happening overseas. And it doesn't really matter which vaccine they're taking overseas. These are the standard injuries that are being recorded.
Yeah, they are occurring in all the countries where vaccines are being widely rolled out. All of the overseas databases have got many, many more cases than us because they're much further ahead with the rollout. I believe we're going to actually talk about some of these databases, but just to give you a bit of an idea, the open VARS system, which is operated by the CDC in USA, they have now got 13,000 deaths recorded after COVID-19 vaccines. And through a separate CDC monitoring system, they have an additional 45,000 deaths, which haven't been included in the VARS system. They've also got over 500,000 reports of serious reactions, 545,000. And 200,000 of those reports include hospitalisation or extended visits to ER rooms.
Yes, it's overwhelming. And so do you think that CALM, the Centre for Adverse Reaction Monitoring here in New Zealand, do they have enough people in there to take the emails and the phone calls, etc., to be able to support the people who are phoning in, or do you feel that...
No. The short answer is no. I think the system is completely overwhelmed. I think they're swamped with reports in a way that they, for some reason, had not anticipated. I don't know why they hadn't anticipated this, because it's just reflective of every other data monitoring system in the world that is currently being swamped. So because I have 20,000 members, because I receive hundreds of private messages a day, as well as all the hundreds and hundreds of comments in the group, I've got a real grassroots feel for what's happening, in both in terms of injuries and the difficulties with our reporting system. So our CALM monitoring system is drowning in adverse reactions. They cannot cope. They're very understaffed compared to the requirement of monitoring these injuries. They're lagging behind the actual rollout. So the last monitoring report that we got from CALM covered injections up to the 7th of August. And so I had a look at this morning and I've worked out that since then we've administered 1 million doses with no safety monitoring reporting. So we've got 1 million New Zealanders that have received 1 million doses of the Pfizer mRNA with no data collation through the CALM system as yet. We also know, and this is acknowledged by MedSafe themselves, you can find this information on the MedSafe website, we also know that at best only 5% of actual adverse reactions and deaths are ever reported to the CALM monitoring system. So you need to hold that in mind at all times when you're looking at the data on the CALM system. As of the 7th of August, which is the latest report, we've had 9,157 reports of adverse reactions. 385 of these are deemed as serious. So their criteria for what makes a serious reaction is a reaction that involves hospitalisation, long-term injury or illness, or irreversible permanent injury or illness.
Could you repeat that number again, just mentioned?
Yep. So bearing in mind that we have an anticipated 5% of actual adverse reactions and deaths reported, to the 7th of August, which was 1 million doses ago, so since then we've administered another 1 million doses, to the 7th of August we have 9,157 adverse reaction reports, and 385 of those are deemed serious, which means potentially life-ending, or permanent or irreversible. And we also have something on the CALM data system, which is what we call line listings. So this is, again, publicly available. You can click on the line listings link. And the line listing gives an entry listing for every individual symptom that has been reported. So, for example, one injured person could report three or four different symptoms. So we've got 32,000 line listings reported. So multiplying that out, bearing in mind we have a 5% reporting rate, that comes to 640,000 individual symptoms of adverse reactions.
Yeah, it's shocking. It's totally shocking. Now, can you tell me, if we have listeners who think they may have had a vaccine reaction, how do they get this reported, please?
Okay, so what we're going to do, Tim, at the end of this, when you post this, I will ask you if you'll include the link to the CALM monitoring system.
Certainly.
And also, if you have listeners who have experienced an adverse reaction or somebody close to them has died in the days or weeks following the vaccine, seemingly suddenly and unexpectedly, I'd love to invite them to join the Health Forum NZ Facebook group. And once you're there, I can connect you with our team of volunteer reporters, our registered nurses and our doctor, who will support you in ensuring that your injury is reported to both our citizens database and the CALM government monitoring system.
Now, thank you. Now, your citizens database, is this just all voluntary? Do people donate money so that you can do this because they're very concerned and they care?
Well, it's amazing. I've been blessed. I have to say this is potentially one of the hardest times of my life. I mean, I'm working 70 to 80 hours a week on this, and it is a voluntary thing that I'm doing. But in the last 6 weeks or so, I've had several very generous group members who have donated money to me to support me and support the work I'm doing. And we're always gratefully receive such things. And of course, we will use those kind of funds as well for any potential legal action that is needed down the line, looking at any issues around mandatory vaccination, no jab, no job stances. This potentially will lead to legal action in a number of ways in New Zealand, so that's going to all take funding as well.
Yes, I am aware that Sue Gray, lawyer Sue Gray, has been doing some very profound work, working huge hours like you. And also, fortunately, we've got voicesforfreedom.co.nz. This group is really starting to build up, getting people's attention around this whole challenge that's facing us. So, yes, we have been on the back foot for quite some time, and I'm trusting that we can get on the front foot to get the appropriate information out to people. Now, the New Zealand government has this plan of zero COVID, and they're wanting to establish herd immunity through getting almost everyone in New Zealand vaxxed. Do you think this will work?
Well, that's a great question, Tim. Certainly it's the stance of our government. Sadly, based on what we're seeing overseas with the Pfizer vaccine, I think this is pie in the sky. I think it's somewhere over the rainbow stuff, because the problem we have with this is that the Pfizer vaccine is what is called a leaky vaccine. So it doesn't produce immunity to actually catching COVID. So many, many people around the world who are fully vaccinated have still caught COVID, still are infected with the virus. Many people still develop serious illness and some of them die. And the other aspect is not only does it not prevent you from catching COVID, it also doesn't prevent you from transmitting COVID. So with a vaccine like this, termed a leaky vaccine, it is completely impossible that vaccinating even every man, woman and child in New Zealand would not be able to prevent the one case of COVID coming across the border and then being transmitted through our vaccinated population. So it will never happen with this vaccine.
Yes, because we're seeing overseas in countries that are heavily vaxxed, USA, UK, in particular Israel. Israel's really, they've got so many people who have been vaxxed, and yet there's so many people also going to hospital after they have been vaxxed. Can you explain anything around this, please?
Yeah, Israel is, I think, is acknowledged as being the most heavily COVID-vaccinated population in the world using the Pfizer mRNA vaccine, which is the sole COVID vaccine that we've used in New Zealand up to this point. And so Israel were really a test case country who made a deal with Pfizer that they would be first in line and that they would receive enough vaccines for their entire population down to children aged, I think currently down to children aged 12, from age 12 up through the rest of the population. And in return for Pfizer providing first-in-queue vaccines, the Israeli government has made a deal that they will release the medical records of all the Israeli citizens to Pfizer. So effectively, the Israeli population is a test population for Pfizer. And sadly, they're not doing a great job of demonstrating a high efficacy in terms of protecting, in terms of the Pfizer vaccine, protecting from infection, protecting from serious illness, or protecting from death. So what's happening right now, having given all of those people the first and the second jab, Pfizer and the Israeli government are now rolling out what they call a booster shot for all people aged 40 and above. But the truth is that the booster shot is not going to be any more effective than the failed first and second doses, because the mRNA vaccine is based on, is using mRNA reflective of the spike protein in the Wuhan strain, the original strain of COVID-19. And now Israel and many other parts of the world have moved on through to the Delta strain of COVID, and that includes quite a few alterations, mutations in the spike protein. So the antibodies that are being triggered by the Pfizer vaccine are doing a really poor job of recognising the spike proteins from the Delta variant when you're actually infected or come into contact with it. So just adding a third shot, a booster shot of exactly the same vaccine is going to produce exactly the same results, as far as I can see.
Yes, this was what I'm hearing too. I saw an interview of Dr. Malone, and what he is saying, that Dr. Fauci is using old information. Dr. Robert Malone, and he says, yes, Fauci is using old data, and they've become very critical of Dr. Fauci lately because he jumps from one side of a coin to the other. And Dr. Malone says that the FDA and the CDC are not transparent. They're just not transparent, and they're not open. And slowly, slowly, people are starting to realize that these two big institutions are in cohorts with the World Health Organization, and particularly with the corporations who are producing these vaccines. And this is becoming more and more pronounced. So well, look, we'll move on if that's okay. So you're seeing things that are happening overseas. So with nearly 20,000 members in your group, I mean, you're getting a real grasp of how the questioning side of New Zealand is feeling, those who are looking more deeply than just safe and effective. What is the mood amongst these people that you are picking up?
Well, great question, Tim. So the mood when people first discover the health forum and they come in, the mood is one of disbelief, because up until discovering the information in there, perhaps the only knowledge they've had about COVID-19 vaccines is the COVID-19 page, the 1 o'clock updates, the articles run in the Herald and stuff online. And on all those platforms, you know, I challenge you to find a single story that relates to the potential for injury or harm from these vaccines. So the mood when they first come along is one of disbelief. And then after a little while, that mood changes into anger. They feel incredibly frustrated and incredibly angry that New Zealanders are not receiving this kind of information in order to make a truly informed consent to receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. And then as the months have gone by, we've moved from that kind of feeling to feelings of despair for a lot of people, because we've got a lot of people in our community who are now faced with the no jab, no job situation. Doctors, nurses, midwives, physiotherapists, teachers, supermarket workers, pharmacists, you name it. Lots of professions who are now in the workplace coming up against the mandatory requirement to have what is still an experimental vaccine.
Yes.
So our government gets extremely upset when anybody even calls it experimental.
Yes.
But the CDC have given it an emergency use authorisation. Here in New Zealand we have the equivalent, which is a provisional consent via MedSafe. And the reason that it's only a provisional consent is because much of the data that is required to ensure the safety and efficacy of the vaccine, much of the data is not yet available. So our New Zealand MedSafe passed a provisional consent, provisional on 58 questions to Pfizer, 58 requirements for further data. And I had a little look this morning before I started speaking to you. Here we go. So those 58 conditions include safety data around use in pregnancy and breastfeeding, the possibility for the development of autoimmune disease down the line, the possibility of developing what we call antibody-dependent enhancement, which is a very strange kind of hyperimmune response that means that the vaccine can actually lead to more serious illness and death down the line. And then further questions around purities of the vaccine, the solvents it contains, the nanolipid particles, and the stability of the vaccine. So those were the 58 questions to Pfizer that our MedSafe sent to Pfizer
with
conditional approval for the vaccine. And as of this morning when I checked, only 14 of those questions had actually been answered. So we still have many, many questions where we need continuing data or outstanding data relating to safety, security and efficacy of the vaccine. This despite we have, I think, coming up to 3 million doses already administered into Kiwi arms.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, all I'm wanting to ask is how do you feel at this moment of what you're seeing unfolding in New Zealand? Because, I mean, we all wake up every morning and for a few moments, waken up, lovely day, and then all of a sudden, boom, COVID, and it just impinges on us. I mean, I'm tired. How are you?
I'm just exhausted, Tim. I mean, I'm nearly 60. I'm 60 next month. I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. We bought a beautiful home by the ocean a year ago and we moved here with the intention of me cutting my back for 3 days a week and reaping the rewards of all the hard years of work, having a peaceful, tranquil life, just loving my family and loving my community and relaxing. And so that was my expectation a year ago, and I find myself living a life where I have become the coalface of the questioning of safe and effective with COVID vaccines. And as I said, I'm working, 70 or 80 hour weeks with a huge team of volunteers, 20,000 people in our community. And so how do I feel besides exhausted? In all honesty, I swing between feeling enraged, frustrated, sad. I cry often because I process the stories that come through. I speak to many families on the telephone and listen to their stories and record their stories of family members, with permanently injured with blood clots and strokes, or family members who have died in the 48 hours after their vaccine who just simply didn't wake up. And these people range in age, right from 33 years of age right up to 100 years of age. So it's really very difficult for me to keep my equilibrium when I pick up a newspaper or, God forbid, turn on the news on the television and I see the propaganda. I can call it nothing more than propaganda that is rolled out day after day on every platform 24 hours a day telling New Zealanders nothing more than safe and effective. And then I sit quietly in my little home by the beach and I live in the twilight zone because I speak to dozens, I take hundreds of reports from families where their lives are permanently changed. There has been no acknowledgement. They are silent. They are not given any media time. They're not interviewed on the TV. They don't even get a column inch in the Herald. So it's hard for me to keep my equilibrium and to retain my faith in this government and adverse reaction monitoring system. It takes a lot of effort for me.
Yes, because essentially we human beings, where the joy has been squeezed out of life, when in actual fact this is what humanity is supposed to be able to experience daily. And so I hear you, because I acknowledge that this is really super tough, to the degree that I was asked this question: do you think there's a lot of terror in New Zealand as a result of the media not publishing the truth about the death rates from COVID and Delta? Have you heard of this? Can you add to this?
Yeah, very much so. So I put together the picture of the snippets that I see on TV of, you know, when they thrust the microphone in somebody's face and they're sitting in a car waiting for a PCR test, because, you know, there's been a case in the local supermarket and there's thousands of people that turn up for PCR tests. And for a young guy in the last outbreak, he was about 16 or 17, and he was clearly terrified that somebody in his school had tested positive. And then I also compare that with the conversations over here in the local community, or the conversations of the newcomers to the health forum before they are fully educated. And I realise that people in New Zealand have this concept in their head that if you get COVID, it's highly likely you're going to die. And if you're not going to die, it's highly likely you're going to end up in hospital or extremely ill. And I get very, very frustrated by the lack of truth in the media. If we look at WHO, World Health Organization stats, or look at the stats from the world famous, probably the leading epidemiologist in the world, John Ioannidis, and we look at his stats, the latest stats, based on having the Delta variant as the predominant variant, we look at, for example, the death rate of 0 to 19-year-olds, so youthful, you know, children and young adolescents, and we see their death rate globally is 0.0027%. And then we look at the death rate of 20 to 29-year-olds, and we see the death rate of 0.014%. And basically, right up to the age of 70 years of age, the death rate is 1% or drastically below 1%. Not until we get up over 70 do we see that escalating up to 5.5% for the very elderly with comorbidities. So New Zealanders don't understand that. And the latest World Health Organization data shows that 90% of all COVID deaths are people with serious comorbidities. So these are people with underlying heart disease, diabetes, obesity, etc. And the average age of death is 82 years of age. Where's the Herald telling New Zealanders that stuff so people don't have to live in pure terror every minute of the day?
I'm speaking with Linda Wharton of the Health Forum NZ, the Health Forum NZ, which you can find on Facebook, and she's also lindawharton.com. Well, this is the challenge for all of us. We realise now that the media is captured. I had somebody speak to us very recently, and she said, yes, they're captured, and it's global media that is captured, and there's this fear that perpetuating it seems to be driving division and almost the creation of a medical apartheid system. Is there any truth to that?
Very, very much so. I mean, you know, I talked about crying and I talked about feeling grief with this work, and so much of that is around the stories, the conversations I read in my group about families being divided over this jab, grandmothers being told they can't see their grandchildren unless the grandmother will be vaccinated, parents urging their adult children not to have it until there is more data, until it becomes clearer what the long-term implications of this gene therapy are, and children rebuffing that and it causing family division. And, you know, this sort of second-hand, second-class citizenship that is developing with the people who are saying, no, I want to watch and wait. I don't trust this. There are too many deaths, too many adverse reactions. It's not doing a job of preventing illness or transmission. I want to wait, watch the waiting. And so fully vaxxed friends are shunning them. Fully vaxxed family members them, that was shunning them. And so in our beautiful land, we are rapidly seeing the development of a medical apartheid system, something I never thought I would see, and it actually grieves me.
It does. It's heartbreaking. I mean, so now our government is rolling out the jab, and it's to younger people, and they've stated their intention is to vaccinate down to 6 months. Is that true? And do you think New Zealand parents are being fully informed in order to make this decision for a six-month-old baby? It's astounding.
Yeah, so several times various government ministers, I think I've seen Chris Hipkins twice say it, that the intention and the hope is to roll out the COVID vaccine down to 6 months of age and potentially have it on the childhood immunisation schedule. So far, globally, the approval age is down to 12, but they're hoping within a month or so that that will be dropped to 9 and rapidly dropped to younger and younger ages. So do I believe that New Zealand parents are fully informed? I believe New Zealand parents have half a percent of the information they need to make a safely fully informed decision for the welfare of their children. And in New Zealand, one of the most alarming aspects of this is that we have a law in New Zealand that means that our 12-year-olds are able to make their own, quote, fully informed consent decision about whether or not to receive the vaccine. So a parent does not have to be present. So this is likely to happen in a school setting where the vaccine is brought to school. Your child, if the vaccinator deems that they are of sound mind and that they seem to understand the very limited amount of information that they're given about the safety of the vaccine, if they're deemed competent, your 12-year-old can say, yes, I want this vaccine, and promptly receive it. Now, if you as a parent have spent time doing your research, and if you as a parent are aware of the complete lack of safety data, the complete lack of long-term data relating to any potential issues with the future fertility of your child, any future autoimmune development, you name it, the data is not there for children. So if you're a parent that's done that research and you've decided you do not want your child vaccinating, your 12-year-old choice trumps your wishes. So we're going to see many families in New Zealand where the parents have said no and the 12-year-old has said yes, and that's it. That's complete. Your 12-year-old gets the vaccine.
When was that law put through that children as young as 12 could make that decision? When did the New Zealand government pass this, and why did not the TV1 and TV3 and the New Zealand Herald have that as the leading news for that particular day and succeeding days?
That's a question, Tim. I don't know when this was actually passed. I know up until the COVID-19 vaccine that this has been the case, but the cutoff age has been 16. So your 16-year-old was deemed able to make their own informed consent. And with the arrival of COVID vaccines for 12-year-olds upwards, the New Zealand government had brought that age down to 12 for the COVID vaccine. Ironically, this is a vaccine that was developed more rapidly than any other vaccine in living history. You know, the usual development timeline of a vaccine, if it's done in haste, is 5 years. Many of them take 10 years. This one was less than 1 year, and that 5 to 10 year timeline includes years of long-term monitoring and pharmacovigilance, all of which we don't have with this vaccine. So it seems a cruel irony that the one vaccine that has been deemed, that your child is deemed able to make their own consent for, is the one that uses a completely novel gene technology never used before in a widespread vaccination program, and one that was rushed to market with no long-term safety and efficacy data.
Yes, it's overwhelming for so many people. And so can I come back to one thing again? Are people in New Zealand registered? Is it 2 people a day are usually dying after having the jab, that within, say, 2 weeks of that, it's an average of 2 people dying a day?
Well, it depends what data you're looking at. So I've just got a sheet here with the New Zealand data on. I'll just find it. So we've got the citizens database, And then we've got the CALM, the government monitoring. So we'll look at CALM first. And on their latest safety report up to the 7th of August, they list the fact that they've had 26 post-vaccination, post-COVID vaccine deaths reported to them. They then published that 17 deaths are unlikely due to the jab. However, none of the information explaining how they come to that conclusion, none of that information is released to the public. 4 deaths were deemed not enough information to decide, and 5 deaths are still under review. So we've got 26 deaths reported temporally related to receiving the vaccine. That's in the government MedSafe database. And then in our citizens database, we have got a check this morning. We have got 113, so that's 113 deaths of New Zealanders that have occurred suddenly and unexpectedly in the 24 hours, 2 weeks after receiving the vaccine. Many of those deaths are blood clots, strokes and heart attacks, and they range in age from 33 years up to 100 years of age. So there is no reference to those deaths that we have recorded. There's no reference in the CALM database. So 4 weeks ago, we sent our citizens database of deaths to Jacinda Ardern, Chris Hipkins, Ashley Bloomfield and Michael Tatley, who's in charge of the CALM monitoring system, with a covering letter, and we have not even received an acknowledgement of receipt from any of those agencies.
Yes, I hear that Sue Gray is sending communications to these same people and not receiving any recognition as well. And as a lawyer, she has got a relatively good understanding now because she's been working 80, 90, 100 hours a week endeavouring to clarify the legals with this. So on another standpoint, are there other messages that the government could be sharing with its people besides getting the jab?
Yeah, I'll answer that in 1 second, Tim. I just want to add one more comment, re the death database. I just want people to understand that I am not saying that all of those people have been killed by the vaccine. I am saying those are all people that we have confirmed received the vaccine and died suddenly and unexpectedly, temporally related from 24 hours out to 2 weeks after the jab. So it is the responsibility and the requirement of our data monitoring system to investigate each and every one of those deaths and to prove otherwise that they were not caused by the vaccine.
Yes, well, you see, the other thing is too is that when there's a death of a loved one, you're heartbroken and you're hurting and so all you want to do is gather your family around you and partake in the grieving and the healing process, and you haven't got time to think about, I must contact the government and make a complaint because you're crying inside.
That's right, absolutely right. And one of the things that has become really apparent through the citizens database is that the hospitals and the doctors and the vaccine hubs that are administering the vaccine are not doing what is actually required of them in terms of the CALM monitoring. So if you read the CALM system, it's set up in such a way that any adverse reaction, any change in health or development of a new symptom that occurs in the days to weeks after a vaccine should be reported to the CALM monitoring system for them to ascertain whether it was connected to the vaccine. What I'm seeing and hearing time after time is people telling me, my doctor said the stroke that I had 48 hours after the vaccine was just a coincidence, so it hasn't been reported to CALM. And I can't tell you how many hundred times a week I'm hearing that. That accounts partly for the less than 5% data capture that MedSafe themselves acknowledge. So the system is set up with the expectation that any change in health, any blood clot, stroke, new onset disease that occurs sort of in the 4 to 6 weeks after the jab should be reported.
Everything I feel is going to show up very shortly on the global database system when people take the jab and then you hear or see the deaths skyrocket in many cases straight afterwards or within a month, 2, 3 months or whatever. And it's going to actually show up globally, is it not?
it's already showing up globally. So if you just look at the BARS database, which is the US database, the government database like our CALM, they have some interesting data. So in America, they normally administer about 278 million vaccines per annum. And to date, they have administered around 27 million COVID shots in the entire history of the COVID shots. And what is showing up in their database is that by August the 6th of this year, COVID reports accounted for 39% of all serious events reported to the VARS system since 1990. And COVID reports accounted for 51% of all deaths reported to the VARS system since 1990. This despite only 27 million doses having been administered, and in a typical year, 278 million doses of other vaccines are administered. So you can see that the thousands of times more representation of injuries and deaths with COVID vaccines versus any other vaccine.
Yes, it's staggering that we're sort of living in this nightmare. Yes. Now, are there any other messages that the government should be sharing? Okay. What other...
Yeah, I got off track. Sorry, Tim.
That's okay. What other things can people do? Because I'm taking heaps of vitamin C. I'm getting out in the sunshine in the morning, in the afternoon. I'm barefoot in the park or on the grass where I can. I'm doing vitamin D free.
Great.
I'm doing sunshine vitamins and I'm having good quality food and fresh veggies that I grow from my garden, organic, everything like that. What other things can people do? Because I hear of everything from grapefruit rinds to pine needles. Can you explain in a few moments, please?
So the easiest thing, it's the key messaging that New Zealanders should be actually receiving from our Minister of Health, with the focus on health, is that COVID is a viral infection. And so we know that your organism, your unique individual body, has a higher degree of resistance to all infections, including viral respiratory infections and including COVID-19. You have a better resistance and improved likelihood of doing really well if you contract the infection, if you look after your overall health. So what does that mean? How do you support your immune system? We know that the leading risk factor for poor outcome with COVID-19 is obesity. So I don't recall our government telling our people that once, but we've had months of COVID not being in our community when that messaging should have been delivered. You know, use the propaganda to tell people how to lose weight, to roll out the programs to support them in weight loss. And then if they do get COVID, their chances of dying from it are drastically reduced. So weight loss is up there. The other things that support your natural immunity. There was a recent study that showed that the three biggest risk factors for COVID mortality were obesity, age, and then after that was anxiety. So look at how when the Kiwis are terrified because they have no idea what their chance of dying of COVID is. So you live with chronic anxiety. It's the third leading factor predicting a poor outcome if you contract COVID. So that's why I want people to understand the very, very small likelihood that they're going to be a death statistic or a serious illness statistic. Meditating.
Yes.
Breathing. You know, walking daily, nature bathing, walking daily somewhere beautiful if you can, if you're lucky enough to live somewhere where you can walk on the beach or in a field or in a forest. Breathing fresh air. Getting enough sleep. So we know that you're getting 6 hours sleep a night, your immune system is versus getting 8 hours of sleep a night. So really giving conscious attention to sleep hygiene, getting more sleep. And then, of course, your diet. So we know with your diet that focusing on a plethora of fresh fruits and vegetables, if you're lucky enough to have the financial resources to buy organic fruits and vegetables, even better. Not everybody can do that. So fresh fruits and vegetables that are purchased and eaten quickly after purchase, so they're not sitting in your fridge for 2 weeks before you eat them. Eating raw foods as well as raw fruits and vegetables as well as cooked. Staying away from the things that we know suppress your natural immunity. So that's sugar, simple carbohydrates, getting rid of the sugars, only having natural sugars from fruit and complex carbs like beans and lentils and some whole grains. And in terms of, oh, you know, cutting down on your alcohol, stopping smoking. There's never been a better incentive to turn away from cigarettes than right now. If you're a smoker and you get COVID, you've got the dice stacked against you. So use this as a motivation to cut down, swap to vaping, and then come off vaping. So many, many people are managing to stop smoking by swapping across to, you know, nicotine vaping and then bringing the levels of nicotine down slowly and then stopping vaping altogether. And then in terms of supplements, yeah, here we are in the winter. We don't have enough UV exposure to UV rays to make our own vitamin D. We know that vitamin D deficiency is endemic in New Zealand, partly because we have a sun safety message that prevents most people, or, you know, that trains most people not to spend exposure to the sunlight. Therefore, they're not making, without using a sunblock, just more skin exposure. Therefore, they're not making their own vitamin D. So everybody should be supplementing with vitamin D through the winter. Elderly are chronically vitamin D deficient, as are people with dark skin. So that's our Māori, our Pacific Islanders living in New Zealand, and all the other cultures here with dark skin. They have a poorer ability to turn UV rays into vitamin D. There's real evidence that an optimal vitamin D level will help reduce your likelihood of infection and your likelihood of a severe outcome. The same with vitamin C and the same with zinc as well. So those are just a few of the messages that I personally believe our Ministry of Health should be spending some time, some money and some effort getting out into our New Zealand population.
Yes, I agree. I'm astounded that they're not leading with this and saying, yes, this is the most important thing. Take care of your intake of whatever you do. I mean, I have the best of water. It hasn't been sanitized by chlorine or fluoride or anything like that. And so I'm very, very fortunate. And I realize in the city there is a lack of room to grow your garden. And so, yes, I thank you so much for restating that. Really important, Linda, for us to recognize that.
And that makes me sad. That makes me frustrated and sad that the messaging is that our only solution is to have the vaccine, complete with all of the potential risks and inadequacies that we're seeing around the world and here in New Zealand. And we're told the only solution is to have the vaccine. And that is simply not true. If you decide you want the vaccine, go for it. Do your research, be fully informed. Have freedom of choice and go for it. But know that's not the only thing you can do.
That's right. Now, just in closing, the ambulance service in New Zealand, my heart goes out to all the people who are the first responders in the case of an emergency, because from what I gather, they're having to work extremely hard now solely because of people suffering from either suicides or an injury as a result of the vax. So I don't know if you wish to add to that, but all I can say is that I am thankful that these people work tirelessly to keep humanity alive.
Absolutely. I have many frontline responders in my group, ambulance drivers, paramedics, nurses, doctors, and they talk to me. And I know I've spoken to several ambulance drivers who are barely coping with the degree of overwork and the severity of the cases that they are ferrying to hospital that they deem vaccine injury. And I have a funeral director in the group who recently told us that he decided that he would start asking the families of the deceased whether the deceased had just received a COVID vaccine. And of the last 7 burials he did, 6 of those answered yes, that they'd received a COVID vaccine the 1 to 2 weeks prior to their death.
Yes, that is very telling, extremely telling. Linda, there is so much more that I would have liked to speak to, but you've got a doctor and I've got the same doctor, and on nzdsos.com they have a section in there on other means of taking care of your health. And I noticed that they are linked to the US National Library of Medicine dated June 21st, 2021, and it's about ivermectin. And the report in there says it's a very important drug to be able to help and support people other than going for the vaccine, over?
Yeah, so that's New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out with Science. That's nzdsos.com. that's a collective of 50 or more doctors now in New Zealand who are concerned about the lack of information that New Zealanders are receiving, about the inability of New Zealanders to make a truly informed consent process for this vaccine because of all the things that we've just talked about in this interview. And one of the drugs that has been used widely overseas has both a prophylaxis or preventative and also a treatment for COVID-19 is a drug that's been around for over 40 years called ivermectin. It's an anti-parasite drug. It's used in both humans and animals. So we use ivermectin for horses in New Zealand. I don't know whether we use it for cows, but I presume we probably do. And it is a very, very safe drug when it is prescribed appropriately. And it is demonstrated, Dr. Tess Laurie, who is a very independent researcher in the UK, has recently just done a peer-reviewed meta-analysis of, I think 25 different ivermectin studies from around the world. And she's found that the death reduction from using ivermectin, the reduction in COVID mortality, I think, was upwards of 60%, and the reduction in the number of cases or infectivity was upwards of 80%. So Dr. Tess Laurie, who has no conflicts of interest and is not employed by pharmaceutical companies, or she has no shares in pharmaceutical companies,
yes,
she's a respected advisor to the UK government. She petitions very strongly for the widespread use of ivermectin.
Yes.
Here in New Zealand, our government has effectively banned it. You can't buy it. You can't just ask your doctor to prescribe it because most doctors in New Zealand refuse to prescribe it. A few will prescribe it, and then you have to sign a waiver for its off-label use. And then, in theory, you can receive ivermectin in New Zealand, although based on several calls to pharmacies last week, I was told it was out of stock in all pharmacies and out of stock at the wholesaler. So you've got your work cut out for you to get it legally through legal channels in New Zealand.
Thank you. Yes. Linda, we're out of time, and I really want to appreciate this. This is fantastic what you've done and what you're doing and what you continue to do. We have to realise that we're spiritual beings having an earth experience, and our body has to be cherished as a temple, because there is a far, far greater picture than what we know. But we need to realise that the sovereignty of the human body is at stake here, and we have to be very, very conscious and loving as we get the information that's important. So I want to say thank you.
That reminds him. I take that on board. Thank you for that reminder. It's sometimes easy to get lost in the strife of it all and forget that.
We do. Yes, life is hectic. We've got work to do, still, sadly.
We sure have. I so appreciate the work you're doing, Tim. Thank you. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to have a voice again. I really appreciate that too.
Yes. Okay, well, catch up soon. So love to you, love to Craig and your family, and this will be broadcast out of a Sky Tower in Auckland.
Oh, thanks, Tim. That's awesome.
That was Linda Wharton of Health Forum NZ. Health Forum NZ on Facebook. As Linda mentioned, the New Zealand Centre for Registering Any Injuries or Adverse Effect from the Vaccine, please go to the website www.nzphvc.otago.ac.nz/calm. Calm is spelled C-A-R-M. They could have made it easier for you, couldn't they? Just a very simple link or URL, like calm.gov.nz. In the meantime, stay in our heart, stay honest, stay courageous. Thank you. Please remember, share this and network this among your friends and family and kin. Thank you. www.voicesforfreedom.co.nz. voicesforfreedom.co.nz. And also, thebuzz.nz. Thebuzz.nz. Kia kaha and aroha. Stand strong and love.
If you